The Squiddy Nurse Podcast episode is brought to you by healthcareproviders.ca.
Attention, hospital employees and retirees in Canada.
Picture this, a benefit plan designed for casual and part-time hospital employees and retirees who aren't covered by their hospital's group health plan. Introducing Healthcare Providers Group Insurance Plan, a friendly partner dedicated to your health and well-being. With affordable plan premiums and an exceptional support team, Healthcare Providers, also known as HCP, is dedicated to helping you every step of the way. Enrolling is easy, and you'll have access to a wide range of health and basic dental benefits from day one. Already have coverage through your spouse? HCP still has your back. For less than $32 a month, the Signature Package, which includes life, long-term disability, accidental death, disease, and dismemberment, provides valuable income protection and peace of mind for the unexpected. Take charge of your health and financial security today. Visit healthcareproviders.ca to learn more.
Is this thing on?
I think they can hear us a bit better now. Do you think they are ready to change the status quo?
It's one thing to get them listening, but now let's get them to act.
You're now about to witness the strength of nursing knowledge.
Hi, and welcome to the Gritty Nurse Podcast, an unfiltered and unapologetic podcast which discusses health and healthcare. My name is Amy.
My name is Sarah.
And we are your hosts.
Don't forget to hit the subscribe button wherever you listen to podcasts, Google, Spotify, iTunes, or our YouTube page. Please rate and review us.
Make sure you get our book, The Wisdom of Nurses, coming April 2nd, 2024. There's no better gift than giving the wisdom of nurses to nurses during nursing week.
Hi, and welcome to the Gritty Nurse Podcast. This is a podcast that we talk about unfiltered discussions related to health and healthcare. My name is Amy.
And my name is Sarah.
And we are your hosts for today. So today is a little bit more of a nursing specific episode, but I think, you know, even if you think about maybe your own industry, maybe we can kind of have an understanding of like where your industry fits on being one of the most trusted professions. And I think this is, again, another timely report where there was a Gallup poll done, and for an impressive 22nd year, nursing was rated as the most trusted profession once again. What are your thoughts?
I'm not surprised. And I'm quite pleased to see nursing on the list. I have some mixed thoughts about other professions on the list, but I'm really happy that nursing made it through the pandemic, through everything we've been through. It still seems that we have the trust of the public, which is really nice.
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the things that it's so like we said, 22 years in running, I think there was only one year that we were beaten. I think it was 2001, where firefighters were on top as the most
lots
trusted.
Lots of fires that year, maybe.
Maybe, I guess. But again, like,
it's sorry to interrupt. But you know why? I think it was because of 9/11.
You think so?
That was 2001, right?
Might be.
Yeah. Anyway, we digress.
So despite its number one ranking, only 78% of U.S. adults now believe that nurses have very high or high honesty and ethical standards. But again, it says this was 11 points lower than the highest rating for nurses, which was in 2020, and the height of the COVID-19 pandemic. Again, you know, it's kind of a double-edged sword. So we're named as the most trusted profession, but I think the question actually is like, are we the most respected profession? And I think the rankings would look substantially different if you asked us.
Yeah, I'm just going to read off the top five trusted professions. So this is a full breakdown of how the top five professions ranked. So as we said, nursing was in the top spot with 78%. And in a kind of a distant second, actually, is veterinarians at 65%.
Trust them with your pets.
Another caring profession. And then followed by engineers at 60%. Interesting. And then
And then in fourth place is dentists at
I don't even know how.
59%.
Okay, let's for a quick second. I have no idea how dentists actually ranked because I am terrified of my dentist. And maybe it's just because I've had some like shoddy work and I feel like because again, particularly I know it's probably the same in the States that dental care isn't really covered. They're always trying to upcharge you. So I don't know. I wouldn't consider them to be on my most trusted list, but let's keep
I was
going.
actually going to say, like, do you trust your dentist? Because I don't see my dentist that much. Like, I actually see the dental
The love-hate
hygienist. I
relationship.
see the dental hygienist like 95% of the time. It's like
Right.
nurses, right? You see your nurse probably 95% of the time. In my case, at least, the dentist just makes a quick in and out and is like, how is your dental care? Any changes with your teeth? And then does a quick once over and then leaves. But I
Yeah.
think that if you are in a case where you need more extensive dental work, then your experience will be different. I just didn't even realize that they would make it on the list,
Yeah,
but
I don't know. Like I said, I just feel like they upcharge you for different things, or like every time I'm there, they're like, "Hey, do you need an X-ray?" I'm like, "I'm pretty sure
I think
I
you need a
just
new
had an
dentist.
X-ray," and I'm just like, "I don't think this is right." So I'm sorry. I'm sure there are great dentists out there, but there are some shady ones too.
Absolutely. And in fifth place is medical doctors at 56%. Thoughts?
I don't know. I don't
Well,
know which one I'm playing. Oh no.
my thoughts are like, okay, four out of the five are helping professions,
Okay.
right? And then randomly engineers made it on there. So is it because they have to take this oath, or like, is it because we trust them to build bridges and things like that? What
I
type of engineers are we talking about? Because
don't
would you
know.
say like, oh, I know a software engineer and I trust this person wholeheartedly to create software?
You know, it is a little bit of a weird placing now that I kind of think about it too. But again, let me go back because I don't want doctors to think that I don't think they're trustworthy. I absolutely do. It is surprising to me that they ranked fifth and that their percentage was 56%. So again, I think that's maybe some work that doctors need to do on their part, why only 56% of people find them trustworthy.
Right.
And again, there's probably some historical context. Stuff related to patients. And again, this is an American poll too. So again, I think the system there is slightly different in terms of, the services that are provided or the services that are rendered. Again, we want to see health equity, but I think in the United States, health equity is a huge problem because they have so many different systems in place, whether you have insurance, whether you don't, the level of insurance, whether you can go to this hospital or that hospital, the type of provider. The level of acuity in terms of the professional. So again, yeah, 56, you need some work out there.
And maybe it's because a lot of people don't have doctors that look like them. That could be the case. And maybe there are a lot of barriers to getting into medical school and going through the training. I'm just guessing here, but
Yeah, I
yeah.
think the other piece is there's a for-profit model out there, right? It's
Right.
about making money. So when medicine becomes a business, people feel less trustworthy in terms of the fact of like, are you looking out for my best interest? Or are you looking out for your bottom dollar? So yikes. I mean, 56% is pretty abysmal. Anyhow, you probably have the list for the bottom too. Why don't we
I
pick
do, I
the
do. So I
bottom?
also kind of skimmed over the whole list. I cut out everyone in the middle. I'm like, I want to see who's at the top and who's at the bottom. So let's talk about the five bottom professions. Number one, at only 12%, is stockbrokers. So do you trust stockbrokers in general, or do you think they're out for themselves?
I fear it for
Clearly the
themselves.
numbers here reflect what people think. I'm not sure what this one exactly is. Advertising
I think it's
practitioners.
those traveling, like for example, there's like those traveling, what is it called? It's like med salespeople. Like I'm selling you like a device
Oh,
or
okay. Like a salesperson,
yeah, like a medical
like
salesperson.
a door-to-door salesperson back in the day. Oh, okay.
Like specifically maybe to like medicine
Okay.
because this is practitioner, so
Okay. And in third last place, car salespeople, aka your friendly neighborhood used car salesman.
well, the first thing that comes to my mind is like have you seen True Lies?
No,
Okay.
no,
You haven't seen True
no, I
Lies? Oh my
haven't.
gosh, with Arnold Schwarzenegger. Anyways, one of the main characters is a used car salesman, and he's like the most slimy person that you've ever met. So yeah, I see why it's there. They get a bad rap, but I'm sure that they're out for themselves as a profit. They have to make money.
And when I saw these bottom two, I kind of laughed to myself when I
Not
first saw
surprising.
them. So second to last place in and with only 8% is senators. Okay. And in very, very last place with only 6% members of Congress.
So literally like politicians just rank as the least trusted people, or least trusted profession. And that's problematic because we are supposed to be putting our faith in, you know, Congress as well as senators to carry out our, you know, what the constituents, what are the people say. Mm-hmm. And if they're ranking at 8% and 6%, I think we have a serious problem with the people that we elect. So I think that's also speaks to another thing, like, why are people electing people that they don't trust?
Well, I think it's not just that, but people just aren't voting because they don't like any of the candidates. And that's why we have this problem.
We're going to have a bigger problem on our hands 2025. But yeah, like, I mean, I think looking at the tops and the bottoms, it's very interesting. I'm going to leave it to you guys to have a conversation with yourselves, maybe amongst your family members, of who amongst your team you think are the most and least trusted professions. But let's swing it back to nursing because we are nurses. So like I said at the beginning of the episode, I think it's a double-edged sword because although we are the most trusted profession, I do feel that we are also the most disrespected profession and also the least valued. And I have a laundry list of things here. Maybe I'll start with one and then I'll pass it to you, Sarah, mm-hmm. in terms of why I feel like, yeah, you know, people trust us. That's great. I'm glad that there's that respect in terms of feeling that the type of work we'll do will be trustworthy. And I think that comes with a lot of other caveats in terms of the dedication people to have as nurses, the promise people made back in the days when they became nurses. I think all that stuff carries through. But again, when I talk about disrespect and also, you know, least valued, let's talk about the violence. Mm-hmm. It's actually like a silent crisis within our nursing profession where there are so many times that we are hurt. And I don't mean just hurt, like our feelings are hurt. I mean, physical violence. And it's something that is not dealt with at whatsoever. Like, it's just a silent killer within our profession where, you know, I think if you ask anybody, and I think we had this good conversation out in Alberta, I think it was actually the Alberta Nurses Association who asked, you know, the general public, I can't remember, I think they were at like a federal, you know, I know issue, a federal something. And they were talking to many nurses across the board. And they asked this question, if there's a violent patient in the room, who's the most important person in the room? And I think they said like the majority of people
said the patient.
It's like, they don't even think that we don't even value ourselves to think that we would be the most important person in a room of a violent individual. I think back to even like nursing school, when, and even just even in my profession, about, you know, being taught about when a patient was being violent. Gentle persuasion approach. Let's talk them down. Well, you can't talk someone down if they're beating on you. And the other piece is like, they just take it.
Right, right.
It's
I mean,
crazy.
I mean, at least your nursing school covered it because I feel like we just kind of danced around this topic. And
I don't think we covered it. I'm just saying that, like, when it came to just talking about it, it was like, well, you need to use these approaches.
Right.
It wasn't like, protect yourself. You know what I mean?
Right. And I actually found this really interesting LinkedIn article. It was by someone named Zach Smith, and he wrote this article called Violence Against Nurses, Most Trusted Profession or Most Abused. And there's a couple facts and figures I wanted to share. So 44% of nurses report an increase in physical violence since the pandemic. So this is not saying 44% of nurses have had, you know, violent incidents. It's like an increase of 44%.
Oh, yeah.
And 68% report an increase in verbal abuse. And I believe that because I think that during the pandemic, there's been lots of tension. And who do you take it out on? It's the person that you have the most contact with, which is the nurse. 60% of violence in healthcare is against nurses.
Yeah.
Two assaults every hour against the nurse. So I think that's a huge stat. That's only in the States too. So every 30 minutes, a nurse is being assaulted on the job. And violence is 4 to 6 times more likely in healthcare than in other industries.
Yeah, those are some really awful stats. And I think to myself that, like, we just don't, there's nothing put in place. There's no incentives that if we were to, you know, call the police or ask for assistance that will be backed up. We're made to jump through hoops when there are issues. We aren't given adequate training for when there's violence. And again, I look at our, you know, the stats in terms of that we are a female dominant profession. I think most other patients might think twice if it was a man to attack them. But because we're mainly female dominant, I feel like there is that's a part of the issue where they just feel that, you know, this person's not going to lash back out. It's a form of, you know, I'd say almost like intimate partner violence, where you feel that you can take out your anger and aggressions because this person is one, your caregiver, and two, they're also a woman.
Right. And I think there's a lot of rationales to justify why a patient is aggressive. You know, it's they have a disease. They don't know what they're
Yep,
doing.
the
They're too heavily
rationalization is wrong.
medicated, right? And all of this is harmful to nurses. And there's no real accountability. If a patient does harm a nurse, there's been cases where that nurse was told to clean herself up and go right back to care for that
Right.
same patient.
Makes no sense. And I think this is where, like, if you think about any other profession, so let's even go back and look at some of the other ones. So, like, veterinarians, you think if a veterinarian was to start getting beaten on by one of their clients, that they wouldn't call and have that person arrested? 100%. Engineers, yeah, I don't like any other profession, dentists, medical doctors, you're going to kick these patients out of your practice. You're going to like remove them. They're going to be arrested. But why for us, it's something that we have to deal with. And I think it's not. I'm telling you right now, as a nurse, if your ass is getting beaten down, you don't have to take it. They're like, it makes no sense for you to cower in a corner and have to risk your life. At the end of the day, you have to go home to your kids, your family, your friends. You know, your life is your own and you need to protect yourself. And I don't care what your managers or administrators say, call them up, call up a lawyer. It's not right for you to ever be abused on the job.
Definitely. And I just wanted to read some quotes from this episode that went out. It was actually an article and a podcast episode. So there's a nurse named Jana Alley. She said, "This was not my first assault. This was my fourth assault in healthcare.
Wow.
My very first assault was when a patient got my stethoscope around my neck because I had been a nurse for about 5 minutes and I didn't know any better. He strangled me, scared me. But you know, back then, I feel like it wasn't as prevalent to have the violence." And then years later, she went to a trauma and came back, and somehow my patient had gotten out of his restraints. He beat me and busted my face, and I had some injuries.
Wow.
Not to mention that the psychological injuries that came along with it. I guess the worst part was screaming for help. We were so short-staffed. We were running another trauma at the time, and most of my team was gone. He went to jail, and I left the bedside.
Well, I mean, I don't blame any nurse for leaving the bedside to like it's just kind of at the end of the day, it's like, what would you expect? Would you want your partner, your friend, or anybody to treat you like this? If you're walking in a grocery store and being attacked, you would think that it's the right thing to do is to call authorities to have press charges, whatever the case may be. We have to start having a different mindset. And we also need to start asking for more accountability from, you know, our higher ups because they don't give a shit because they're not the ones getting beaten on. So again, we need to talk about the fact that, you know, again, we are the least valued and we talk about violence. But you did touch on another point that I think that it's a good segue in terms of talking about stress and high acuity, the workforce and staffing. These are the other parts of making us feel least valued, where we work in these high acuity environments. Workforce challenges are always there. Some hospitals deliberately understaff because I think always when it comes to cutting costs, nurses are the first ones that are cut. And then there's high turnover. I think we have a very stressful job.
Yeah, there's no way around it. We have a stressful job. We know for the most part that it is stressful, and a lot of this stress is not in our control. There's nothing we can do about it. We don't know what we're walking into when we go on to a 12-hour shift. We just are, you know, handed our assignment, and the day kind of unfolds, and you do with what you can, you do the best you can. So it can be really challenging. Before we move on, I just want to take a quick break, and we'll have a word from our sponsor.
This podcast episode is brought to you by healthcareproviders.ca. Attention hospital HR in Canada. Are you in search for the perfect insurance solution for your part-time and casual employees? Look no further. Meet Healthcare Providers Group Insurance Plan, your go-to option for ensuring the well-being of your team. With Healthcare Providers, also known as HCP, you're not just providing insurance, you're offering peace of mind. HCP's comprehensive coverage includes medical, dental, and vision benefits designed to keep your part-time employees healthy and happy. There's even a package that includes life, long-term disability, accidental death, disease and dismemberment, coverage for those who have already had benefits through their spouse. It's time to bridge the gap between full-time and part-time staff benefits. With Healthcare Providers Group Insurance Plan,
you can level the playing field and show your commitment to all of your team members. Join the community of over 90 plus forward-thinking hospital HR managers who've made the smart choice. Visit healthcareproviders.ca today to discover how HCP can help support your team in a meaningful way.
So we're back, and I think it's a good point for us to talk about some of the other challenges that we're seeing within our system. And again, why we feel not respected or valued. Politics, 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 politics. And I mean, internal politics and external politics, right from middle management upwards. There's just so many challenges in terms of us trying to get our voices forward, us in terms of just, you know, trying to mobilize and move things. We are the people that see all the issues that are happening on the front lines, but there's so much red tape and bureaucracy where we're not listened to, we're not heard, and it's problematic. And the politics obviously make it more difficult. And I think tangling in the politics is looking at also at hierarchy, right? It's just, unfortunately, there still is this hierarchical sense in medicine. We're still trying to dismantle it, but there's this hierarchy where it's like the doctor's on top and everybody else falls in line. And I think that is actually problematic to our profession in terms of progress, in terms of making change, and in terms of having agency and power.
Right. And I think the reason we started this podcast is because we felt we had no voice. We tried to make change. We tried to go up the chain of concern, and nobody was listening. And I think just to add on to the hierarchy comment you made, Amy, is that it's not just hierarchy like doctors and nurses. It's like within nurses, there's hierarchy too. There's like, you know how they talk about nurses eating their young. It's like, oh, okay. Now we're going by like level of experience, or right. We're going by like what hospital you worked from, or what school you went to, what clique you're part of, where have you worked before you went to this unit. There's just so much infighting. I feel like it's like this pressure, right? So it's like a pressure cooker. Like there's pressure from the patients, there's pressure from the doctors, there's pressure from your managers and your coworkers, and you're just like trying your best to survive.
Yep. I mean, you kind of touched on the next point where I was going to bring up where, you know, there's the issue with our profession, like some of the problems we create for ourselves in terms of that own internal hierarchy system, in terms of, you know, nurses silencing other nurses being like, well, you shouldn't have to do that, you're rocking the boat, or, you know, we're supposed to be gentle and domicile, we're not supposed to whatever. And it's just like, fuck that, like, no. We gotta like get stuff done, like we have to make changes, we have to be progressive, we have to be able to push back on certain things. And I think sometimes our own profession and our own colleagues are the ones that are holding us back from doing the things that we should be doing and progressing and making changes and moving forward. And sometimes, yeah, we are our own worst enemy. Again, when I think about like nursing in terms of where most people see it, like most people think, when you think about nursing, you automatically think hospital. Well, nurses work in various different capacities. They work in all sorts of different places, whether it's public health, whether it's business for self. There are so many different areas that nurses are in, but I think the public has this image where it's like, this is the only place that they are. And you see that depicted in movies and news and film, all sorts of things. And I think like we need to change that. We need to start seeing more representation in other forms. I think, you know, I'm glad to hear that more nurses are moving into politics and various different things. And I think we need to change the image of nursing in terms of how people view us. And we also need to do that internal work in terms of making sure that our voices are heard and seen, and that we are seen in different spaces as well.
Yeah. And I think that we are perfect examples of nurses who have taken a non-traditional route. So I'm glad that there are nurses that want to work in hospitals, but that's certainly not the only place you can work. And I know that even talking to people in general conversation, whenever they find out I'm a nurse, they always say, what hospital do you work at? And I'd like to change the narrative and instead say, what is your role, or what do you do, rather than what hospital do you work at? And also, even having conversations with new grads, they're still being told constantly that they need to go to med surg. And it's like, no, you don't need to go to med surg if that's not what you want. You can start anywhere you want. I've never worked med surg. I don't think you have either. And there are more than enough places for you to go if that's what you want to do. So just 100%. Keep that in mind.
And then again, this is not something that we're just making up. I just want to put out there that we're actually considered the least respected and most stressed according to experts and national data. There was an analysis done of the nation's 873 most stressful jobs. And five out of the top are in healthcare. So the roles were urologists, anesthesia assistants, acute care nurses, obstetricians and gynecologists, no surprise there, and nurse anesthetists. So again, this is actually proven by stats that we are the least respected and most stressed.
Yeah, so. I'd like to know kind of where the top five professions fall on this, but I have a feeling that it's not the same for nursing.
Probably not. No. But you were talking about solutions. So why don't we talk about, you know, where we need to go from here?
Yeah, I think it's really important that we're having this conversation and talking about the reality of violence and how prevalent it is in nursing is number one. The other thing is the importance of reporting. So how many times have you failed to report an issue because it's a burden? I think not only do we need to report more, but the whole reporting process needs to be streamlined and to where it's not re-traumatizing that person over and over to simply report what happened.
And it shouldn't be burdensome. Like if we see some of these like forms in terms of someone has to fill out, and it's like more work to fill it out than to actually get the help and support. And I think we just need policies in place. We need to have like, you know, zero tolerance. We need to have policies where, you know, they're protecting nurses and that people can be criminalized for assaulting or harming a nurse. And I think, you know, we've seen really horrible cases where nurses have actually been murdered, a femicide type of case, or intimate partner abuse. And I think we need better protections for nurses that are working in relation to these things. So I'm always a huge proponent of policy, making policy changes, and then holding people accountable. So again, we've seen time and time that hospital administrators like to make their hospitals look great by covering up their tracks in terms of the horrible things that are happening. I'm going to say that nurses need to speak out more and say, hey, this is happening, whether it's through anonymous sources, whether it's through social media. Social media is your friend when it comes to this stuff. You put that stuff out there, put them on blast, especially if they're the ones doing, they're the bad guys. So I think, again, I don't want it to feel like a big ask, but again, you need to think about yourself at the end of the day. Think about that question that we asked at the beginning. If you're in a situation where there's a violent patient in the room, who is the most important person? And it's the most important person is you.
Mm-hmm, definitely. And I think numbers do speak, right? So a lot of times we feel like, oh, we just put, and we talked about this during our talk in Alberta, you put this report and you think nothing's happening. There's actually a lot happening behind the scenes and a lot of rights that you have once that report is in the system. So sometimes just even asking for an update as to what's happened to report, I think is really important. And we also talked about the fact that every time a nurse is injured, if it's a physical injury, there's almost always is a psychological injury. So it'd be nice to have debriefing sessions for nurses that have been hurt on the job.
Yeah, and more mental health supports. I mean, debriefing is great, but a lot of these instances cause harm, cause trauma. So what are the things out there that will help support a nurse? Again, I know we're mentioning Alberta again, but they talked about presumptive care, something that, for example, you know, firefighters and other EMS providers have legislation that will help support them if they have an instance of PTSD from trauma from their work, whereas a lot of these cases, nurses aren't covered.
Right,
so we need
right.
to have presumptive care in terms of making sure that nurses are a part of this legislation, that if they are, they most likely will face a traumatic situation, that they get the coverage, the time off, and the support that they need as well.
Right. And presumptive care really means that we presume that due to the nature of the job that you will experience these things.
Right.
So that's all we're really asking for. This one, I think, is a really big one. Zero tolerance policies. So a lot of people might be thinking, well, how can we have a zero tolerance policy? Because we're a hospital or we're a healthcare facility and we have to care for people. But just because we're in the business of healing sick people, it doesn't mean that nurses have to deal with this abuse.
Yeah.
Healthcare facilities, they need to adopt a zero tolerance policy for violence and begin prioritizing their staff members today.
100%. And I think there are some instances where patients should be kicked out. Maybe that's a hard line, but I think there are instances where if someone is being abusive and being belligerent and being harmful, that maybe they do need to seek care at a different facility. I think about the nurses who are re-traumatized. Like, this is crazy. How can you be harmed by a patient, then have to go back and look after that patient? I think we need to think about what we're doing in healthcare, what we're doing to our workers. Again, no surprise why people will leave the profession at these instances because they don't feel protected or supported. And again, I think this is where we need to look at different ways of doing things. I kind of rolled my eyes when I talked about the zero tolerance policy, because again, that's where you need to see accountability. So you can have a policy, but make sure that you enact it as well.
Yeah, another thing is the shift in culture. So training, reporting, and having policies are one thing, but is there a culture at your facility that treats this issue with the seriousness it deserves? So, having a policy on a piece of paper that nobody reads and nobody knows anything about, is not helpful unless you actually live that policy.
100%.
And the last thing I wanted to mention is legislation. So relying on the honor system for hospitals to police themselves has not been enough.
Yep.
Legislation is key to advancing protection of healthcare workers. So recently, there was something called the SAVE Act, which is in the States, I presume, which awards and tracks grants to hospitals to address this issue, which I've never heard of before.
That's pretty cool.
And I kind of wonder too, like just going back to being abused by a patient, I really think there should be legislation that if you've been abused by a certain patient in the past, that you should not have to care for them again.
Yeah, or even if there's some form of legislation that, maybe hospitals receive less funding based on the number of incidents in terms of violence and showing that there aren't things that are being done in place to protect patients. Or maybe there's some legislation that, nurses, we push for, knowing who our constituents are, knowing who our senators are, knowing who our politicians are, and say, hey, we need this bill to protect healthcare workers. We have to be a part of the solution. Like it does, we can't. Trust me, we cannot rely on someone else or another individual who's not a part of our profession to speak up and to make these changes. It has to be us pushing from the inside out to see changes. So again, reach out to your politicians, reach out to your senators, reach out to those people that you don't trust. Oh my God. But reach out to these folks and honestly push for change, push for accountability, because the only people who can make and see accountability is us. We have to be the ones to do it. Because if we wait for another profession or we wait for other people to notice that, there's violence and there's all these things happening, it's not going to happen. So we got to be the ones to be those change makers.
Definitely. I think that if anyone out there is experiencing any issues, make sure you talk to someone about it because suffering in silence is never the answer, and you are not alone. A lot of nurses have had this happen, unfortunately, and there is some things you can do about, which we kind of outlined in this
Yeah.
episode.
And never hesitate to feel free to reach out to us at the Green Nurse Podcast as well. So thank you so much for listening to our episode on whether nursing is the most trusted profession, as well as the most not respected, as well as least valued. And we'd love to hear your feedback and your comments in terms of how you feel about maybe your own profession. Maybe it's not in healthcare. Do you feel that your profession is respected or trusted or are valued? So thank you so much for listening, and tune in again for next week.
Thanks. Thank you for listening to the Gritty Nurse Podcast. If you have any suggestions or want to hear a specific topic, email us at grittynurses@gmail.com. That's grittynurses@gmail.com.
We are also speakers and upcoming authors available for engagements related to advocacy, nursing, mental health, and health policy. Please connect with us.